Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This is a big week for us. We have a top-tier presidential candidate coming to us in the House here at our Fox 11 studios, Mayor Pete Buttigieg. We're now former Mayor Pete Buttigieg. He just left his job as South Bend, Indiana mayor. We talked to him about a lot of things. We talked about Iran, the big story of the week. We talked to him about infrastructure announcement he made, talked about the homeless shelter that he toured in California. We talked to him about the upcoming debates. We talked to him about why he thinks he's more electable than Joe Biden, why he thinks his experience is better than Joe Biden. We also talked to him, and I thought this was my favorite part, about him, about who he is, about his parents, about his losing his father, about how his husband has influenced him, about being LGBTQ and the sort of responsibility that goes with that in this run. We also had some fun. We played a game called the Name Game, where we asked him for the best way, best trait of each of his opponents, including the president. Really interesting responses. So we're going to play the whole interview, unedited, uninterrupted. We sat down, did the whole thing straight through. Here he is, the mayor, Pete Buttigieg.
Mayor Pete, welcome back to The Issue Is, and good to have you in the House.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. All right, so let's talk about the first time that we were together. This was last March, West Hollywood, first time you were ever there. I was the only reporter that went there. Nobody there knew how to pronounce your last name. And this is what you said. How does a millennial mayor, openly gay man, win the presidency?
Well, the path is narrow, but I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't see a path. And what we found is when we get in front of people, they respond.
I mean, what a year it has been.
It's extraordinary. You know, a year ago, we had about four people, no money, barely any mailing list, and very little name recognition. But as I felt then, it's true now, too. The more people hear the message, the more they're responding to it. And now we're in a position where I would not trade places with any other campaign. Still some work to do to make sure that we take that win, but we see that we are poised to do it. And we'll have our head down in the days and weeks leading to when the voting begins in Iowa. And, of course, California is becoming a bit like those other states, Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, Nevada, because the early vote here is so early that this really will be one of the places that decides how the rest of the process goes.
And of course, the early vote here starts the same day as the Iowa caucus on February 3rd. By the way, great outfit choice today.
Blue tie, can't go wrong, right?
Very good there. So let's talk about some of the big stories of the week. We got to talk first about the big story that everybody's talking about, which of course is Meghan and Harry, and why are they leaving the royal family? No, we're not going to start with that. Although, if you want to weigh in on that, you can. Let's talk about Iran. Of course, we have this plane comes down, potentially shot out of the air by the Iranians, according to some of the intelligence. If that's true, if Iran shot a plane out of the air, what should be done? What should be the U.S. response to that?
Well, first of all, we need to learn more about what happened. The president suggested it was a mistake. I'd like to know whether that's based on any intelligence. But Iran is responsible if one of their systems downed this plane. And as we learn more about the situation, one thing is clear. A dangerous place is growing even more dangerous by the day. We need a president who is focused on how to make sure things become more, not less stable. More, not less, safe. And that means a focus on de-escalation and preventing anything else from happening that could take us down a path to war that even the White House can no longer control.
So what does that specifically mean? How do you avoid war with Iran? Do you bring back the Iran nuclear deal?
Well, I don't think it's possible anymore to rejoin the old form of the nuclear deal. But here's the part that really made it possible for the nuclear deal to work. And again, this administration certified that it was working to stop progress toward nuclear Iran before they withdrew from it. The thing that really made it work is that there were a lot of countries who were part of the deal. It wasn't just a deal between the U.S. and Iran. It was a big part of the international community all on the same page. And right now is a time when we need to be more, not less, close with our allies, other countries that share the interest that we have in a more stable Middle East and share the interest in Iran not having nuclear weapons.
One of the things that that attack on the U.S. base reminded us is that this is not a reality show. This is not a video game. There are real American lives on the line at these bases. Thankfully, no American lives were lost in that particular attack. But having served yourself, what did you learn about the military that you didn't know before, that many people that may not have served need to know?
Well, as you said, this is not a game. And the first thing that comes to my mind anytime I hear the word rocket or missile and U.S. base in the same sentence is I think about how it felt. You know, there was a rocket attack the day I arrived at Bagram Airfield, and there was a rocket attack the day that I left. And just the feeling when that alarm goes off and you know you got a few seconds to get flat is a feeling that people were going through, of course, on that day. And we need to view this not through the perspective of a game or a show. Think about the impact that this is having on American lives. Now, another thing about the military, from having served in it, is everybody in there is there to do a good job, mm-hmm. And will do whatever is asked of them. Will step forward, deploy at a moment's notice. That's part of what you sign up for when you raise that right hand that you do to take that oath. But that's a promise that goes both ways. And when you promise to carry out any lawful order given to you by the United States of America, the United States is promising to take your life seriously, mm-hmm. to never put you into harm's way if there's an alternative. And we've got a lot of very real questions about whether the White House has considered the alternatives, and just as importantly, whether Congress will step up, as the House is beginning to do, to assert its responsibility over war and peace.
Are you suggesting that the president isn't taking that responsibility seriously?
Well, I'll say this. When troops' lives are on the line, you need to think about every move and countermove that could be a consequence of your action. I want to know that a president who takes the lives of troops seriously has consulted with advisors, has thoroughly reviewed intelligence, has consulted with members of Congress without regard to party, and consulted with allies as much as responsibly possible. And I have not seen evidence that any of that took place with this decision.
Let's talk for a minute about that military experience that you have, which is something you've talked about as one of the reasons that you're qualified to be commander-in-chief. One of the candidates you're running against, Joe Biden, didn't serve, but he did spend years in the Situation Room during some of the biggest moments in recent American history, spent years traveling the world as chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, has met with world leaders in hundreds of countries. How is that experience not more valuable for the actual job of being president?
Well, it's just different. Of course, I respect all of my competitors, but I would say that the experience I've had overseas is different, and the experience I've had leading in my own responsibilities at home is different. Look, years spent in Washington is not the same thing as judgment. And what we need most of all right now is a readiness to deal with the threats of the future. The 21st century is full of threats that are just different in kind than what we used to deal with. In addition to all of the kinds of conventional military threats we've got to deal with, we have things like stateless terrorism. Terrorism was my specialty as an intelligence officer. Right. We also have cybersecurity, election security, issues of global health and disease that are coming up, all of which are going to call for not just an understanding of the issues, but the kind of judgment that's ready to take new and unfamiliar threats and problems and make good decisions about how to handle them.
But in terms of Joe Biden, this week he picked up the endorsement of the L.A. mayor, Eric Garcetti, the Long Beach mayor, Robert Garcia. And one of the things that a lot of Democrats have talked about with him, they feel that he's potentially more electable to a broader base of voters. Why are you more electable than Joe Biden?
Well, just think about this. Every time in the last 50 years that my party has won the White House, every single time we've won, certain things have been true about the candidate. It's been somebody who was new on the scene, hadn't run for president before, somebody who was focused on a message around values and opening the way to a new generation of leadership. Every time my party's won, that's been true about our candidate. And every time we've tried something else in the last 50 years, we've fallen short.
Interesting perspective there. We want to bring up some other issues. As you move in next week, one of the big stories is going to be the debate. Last time there was a debate, you were sort of a pinata, everybody hitting you on each side, sort of taking you on. What's your strategy for the debate next week?
Well, my focus will be to continue to deliver our message. There's obviously the heat of competition going on right now. That's part of the process. That's okay. I'm responsible for defending the ideas that I'm putting forward and demonstrating to the American people that I would be the kind of president who seeks to do big things for the country and, critically, do it in a way that actually serves to unify and not polarize this country. Remember, this is not only about finding the nominee who can defeat Donald Trump. And as a veteran from a new generation from the middle of the country, I believe that I'm well positioned to do that. But by definition, this is about who's going to be president that first day after Donald Trump leaves office and lead this country in a better direction. I will continue to show how I believe we can get there and follow American values toward better answers on everything from economic empowerment to delivering solutions on climate change to curbing the gun violence epidemic.
Are you concerned that there are no candidates of color that have qualified for the debate? And what does that say about the DNC and where the Democratic Party's at?
I am. You know, it's upsetting to have been part of one of the most diverse, really the most diverse, historically diverse fields of candidates ever to come forward, and to see that it is now less so. Now, the DNC will set the rules, and we will compete according to those rules. Obviously, we campaigns don't set them. But I think it's also important for us to continue making sure that we're getting our message out and showing that we are committed to an America where everybody is well served.
Let's talk about some of the issues most important to Californians. During the last debate, there was no conversation about homelessness, which is an issue that matters so much to people here in the state. There are actually more homeless people in California than residents of South Bend, Indiana. That's how many homeless people we have. And there's been this debate recently with the president on Twitter suggesting that homelessness is really a state and local issue. Do you think that homelessness is a federal issue? And what do you think is the federal responsibility for taking on that issue?
You know, somebody who has worked on homelessness in many different levels in our community, from creating permanent supportive housing for those experiencing homelessness, to literally having the experience of seeking to convince homeless individuals to come indoors and to make them feel that there's a place for them. One thing I know for sure is that partisan politics from this president is not going to help. Trying to use this as a cudgel to attack other American leaders who are working this issue is the opposite of what we need right now, because this is a problem that does not respect party lines. It's also a problem we can do something about. And yes, I believe there's a federal role. I've proposed that federally we increase affordable housing. As a matter of fact, we can benefit 7 million American families by making real investments on everything from low-income housing tax credits to making sure there are more vouchers to just supporting the development of more affordable housing to begin with. We've also got to make sure people are paid more, and that for those for whom mental health or addiction are an issue, that we as a country are doing a much better job on dealing with those challenges. Of course, a lot of this is local leadership, and I had a chance during this trip to see in Watts, for example, the work that is being done as I visited a bridge facility helping people on the road toward permanent supportive housing. But cities and communities shouldn't have to deal with this alone. They should have the federal government at their back.
You just mentioned that you've had to talk people to come inside. That is one of the big challenges. You have somebody who's mentally ill, somebody who's on drugs, who says, no, I don't want to go in. How do you convince somebody to do that?
Well, the old mentality was, we've got to make sure that you have taken care of all of your mental health and addiction issues before you can access services. And it turns out that doesn't work. That's why the idea of housing first is so important. In other words, even if somebody's not in a position to be in certain kinds of facilities, make sure that there's a low barrier shelter to just literally get them indoors, and then start working on the other issues, connect them up to the services that they need. It will continue to be a challenge, but part of what was so moving and impressive, for example, at this facility we saw in Watts, is the way that some of those reasons that people might hesitate were taken away. Things you wouldn't think about, like for many people, a relationship with an animal is a critically important thing in their lives. So they make sure that it is a dog-friendly environment, making sure that people know that they can get that kind of access, making sure that when there are couples for whom going into a facility would mean separating, that there's an answer there. Sometimes the reasons that people have for hesitating, even though it might seem hard for us to understand, sometimes those reasons can't be dismissed. They can be addressed, and we should address them at every turn.
Another big thing you're talking about this week is infrastructure. You laid out a plan. It's a trillion-dollar plan. It would help repair half the roads by 2030. Also, 6 million jobs that you're promising. Also, some changes when it comes to water and lead, or lead in water. How do you pay for that, one, and how do you actually get something like that passed in Washington, where it seems like Republicans and Democrats don't want to agree on anything?
Well, one thing I think Republicans and Democrats can agree on is the importance of infrastructure, because we need it in order to grow our economy. Now, there is a cost. $1 trillion is not a small amount of money, but unlike things like tax cuts for the wealthy, this is an investment that actually pays for itself. Now, this and everything else that I've proposed in this campaign, from healthcare to education, I've made sure everything I say we should spend on, I'm also explaining how we're going to raise the funds. And it does mean higher taxes on corporations and the wealthiest. It means rolling back the Trump tax cuts. It means reforms to a capital gains tax that basically taxes wealth at a lower rate than we tax work. I mean, you and I may have paid more in dollars last year than some of the biggest multinational corporations in the world on billions of dollars in profits, as long as they are able to game the system. Then everything we need as a country, from these infrastructure improvements for everything from clean water to safe roads, all the way through to what we've got to do on health and education, it's not going to be possible until we're asking those who are best off to pay their fair share, and there is absolutely a way to do that. That's compatible with strong economic growth.
You think Republicans in the House are going to support higher taxes on corporations?
Well, I'll tell you this. You know, across America, Republicans as well as Democrats believe that the wealthiest ought to pay their fair share. And so what we really need to do is to get those who are in Congress to start paying attention to their own voters.
One of those members of Congress is Anthony Brown, a member of the Congressional Black Caucus. He endorsed you this week, became one of your campaign co-chairs. You know, there's been a lot of reporting about the lack of African-American support for your campaign. I know your campaign has said we got to meet a lot of folks, and you've been out spending a whole lot of time with a lot of African-American leaders and constituents around the country. Mm. What is the number one lesson you've learned about the black experience from those conversations that you didn't know a year ago?
Well, I don't know that this was new a year ago, but you certainly hear it a lot now that black voters that I talk to are frustrated with the sense of being taken for granted. Remember, black voters, and in particular in the South, black women, have been the absolute powerhouse of the Democratic Party and are often frustrated that not only are their needs ignored by the Republican Party, but often this sense of sometimes being taken for granted by Democratic politicians. The other thing, of course, that is important is not to talk about black Americans like a monolith. Like sometimes you hear coverage of the black vote as if it's some guy. We're talking about so many different Americans with so many different experiences. But what's common across so many different experiences are the patterns of exclusion that black Americans have been subject to economically, societally, and we have a responsibility as a country to get that right.
Let's talk for a moment about you, to get to know you a little bit better. I think one of the most interesting ways to get to know people is to learn about their parents. And sort of their way that they shaped their worldview. How did your parents shape the way that you think?
Well, my parents are very passionate about the world around us. We were never a politically connected family growing up, but certainly a very interested family. I remember my father always coming home and going straight to the newspaper, sometimes yelling at the TV about what was going on. It gave me that sense that it's important to understand what's going on around you. And one thing that was very important to my mother and my father was that that I be a positive part of that in some way. You know, my folks, my father passed away about a year ago. My mother's become a big part of this campaign. She is at headquarters writing letters to supporters. And I think together we've experienced as a family this incredible way in which a community that they adopted. My father immigrated to this country. My mother came from a whole different part of Indiana. They found themselves in South Bend and found that, to their surprise, it became home and then became a place that I had the chance to serve. Find that after traveling the world looking for adventure and purpose, that my greatest purpose lay right where I'd grown up.
When you think about your father and the fact that he passed away a year ago, do you ever think, like, man, he'd be really proud right now, or you know, what he would think of the fact that you have just catapulted into a top-tier presidential candidate? His son is a top-tier presidential candidate at 37 years old.
Well, I wish that he were able to see this, and I like to think that he'd be very proud of this. I had the chance, as he was in his last days, very ill. It was around the time of my announcement, and I thought about delaying it, but I knew he wanted us to go ahead, and I told him that I wanted to make him proud, and he said, "You will." And that was one of our last conversations, and every day I think about how to make good on that.
Wow. And, of course, the other man in your life that's so important is Chasten, your husband. How has he centered you? How has his influence on your life changed you as a person?
You know, when I was a young bachelor mayor, I couldn't imagine how people could be in elected office and married at the same time. Now that I'm married and running for president, I can't imagine how I could possibly do this without Chasten. When we were deciding whether to do this, in the end he said, you know, I support this as long as you can promise, as we promise each other two things, that we'll always be ourselves, true to our values and who we are, and then we'll find a way to have some fun along the way. And in this process, which can be so demanding and so grueling, and where there's so many voices coming at you, those two promises have been so important, and we work every day to keep true to them.
So how do you have fun?
Well, you know, whenever we get time off, a lot of times it's just at home with the dogs. And the great thing about our two rescue dogs is they're these creatures in our life who Couldn't care less whether I'm up or down in the polls, whether I'm president or not. And that kind of relationship with a creature in your life, I think, is pretty good for you. Just as having someone in your life who loves you the same as Chasten does, no matter what's happening professionally.
Of course,
means so much.
You're a history-making candidate. I remember when I saw you first a year ago, you talked about the fact that you initially wanted to rip out the fact that you were gay. Yeah. It was so hard for you to deal with. And now you're dealing with people every day, meeting folks on the campaign trail who you are a huge role model for them. What has been the most emotional moment for you, maybe meeting somebody in that scenario or something they said to you?
You know, I can't tell you how many times somebody passed me a note on the airplane on the way here to Los Angeles from Denver about what my candidacy meant to him as somebody who grew up in the South, very religious and struggled with this in his family. Hearing from young people who let me know that they feel they don't have to be ashamed now because of this campaign. But some of the most emotional interactions I have also are with people, and sometimes they're older, folks my parents' age who never thought they'd see this day, who will come up to me, and sometimes they won't even be able to say a word. But I'll be able to, we'll have a whole conversation without mm-hmm. saying a word. Just when they come up to shake my hand, I'll know what they mean, and they'll know what I have to say. And so those are some of the most emotionally powerful moments, people who can't put into words. The experience of going from when you thought that this meant that you were going to be on the outside of society forever,
right,
to having someone as a serious contender for the American presidency who belongs to that same experience and that same community.
I mean, what goes through your mind when that happens? I mean, because I know that this initially is not what you thought of doing. And a lot of you talked about the fact that initially you thought about never coming out.
Yeah.
And now you've become sort of the poster child for that.
Yeah, I mean, what changed it for me really was the experience of being deployed and being in a war zone, realizing that I could meet my end and not know what it's like to be in love, and just saying that to hell with that, I got to have a life, and coming home and coming out and eventually meeting Chasten. The biggest thing I realize now is a sense of responsibility,
right,
but also this, I mean, talk about God having a sense of humor, that the very thing I thought might keep me out of being able to serve my country in many ways. Yeah. Is a big part of what I have to offer.
All right, well, we're gonna wrap up soon, but we want to do two quick games that are really fast that are going to be a little bit of fun to get to know you a little bit better, okay? So the first game is called Personal Issues. This is 30 seconds Uh-oh. Where we ask you some things to get to know you a little bit better. All right, here we go. Ready? Favorite superhero?
Ooh, Superman. Sorry, Spider-Man.
Favorite sport to play?
Soccer.
Favorite Disney movie?
Flight of the Navigator, Disney. I grew up on that.
Okay.
I'm going to claim it anyway.
Favorite conservative?
Ooh, Dick Lugar from Indiana.
Favorite California political show?
The issue is.
There you go. last thing you binge watched?
I'm in the middle of Succession right now.
Oh, interesting. And favorite TV show of all time?
Ooh, of all time. Seinfeld.
Seinfeld. Yeah. I thought you were going to say The West Wing.
It's up there.
Okay, so I had this queued up for you. You ready? Here we go. That to me, that song, that makes me happy. And we're appreciative that you're a fan of The West Wing.
Oh, yeah.
One other game that we want to get to. This is called The Name Game.
Oh.
But this is where we're going to ask you one thing that you think is the best thing about each of your opponents. The best thing about each of your opponents, maybe.
Wow.
And try to keep it short. Lightning round, okay?
All right.
Here we go. Joe Biden.
Decency.
Bernie Sanders.
Consistency.
Elizabeth Warren.
Intelligence.
Amy Klobuchar.
Midwesternness.
Tom Steyer.
He has these amazing neckties, these tartan neckties.
Yes, yes. Could be your opponent in the general election? Mike Pence.
Well, he's from Indiana, and that's okay. That's a good thing.
And finally, President Trump.
Give me a couple more days, I'll think
okay.
of something.
Okay. Well, we appreciate you coming in. We've got some parting gifts that we want to give you. This is from a company called Face Socks that sent this to me.
Wow.
I didn't know who to give this to, so I figured I might as well give it to you. So it's your face on a sock, because nothing's more natural than wearing your calves full of your own face. And we also have the issue is socks to give you as well.
Did not see that coming.
My mom does cookies and brownies for our guests every week. So we've got for you and Chasten,
nice,
cookies and brownies in the Issue Is mug. And then we have one last treat. We also want to say thank you, by the way, for the outfit choice. I wear this almost every day, as do you. So for Halloween this year, I was you for Halloween accidentally, and it worked out for me. So thank you for that. And one last thing. This is a treat. We had coming and joining us today the San Pedro High School Golden Pirate Regiment Marching Band. They are the top marching band in the entire state of California. And so I asked them to play one song for you. So here we go.
All right.
Of course, this is the Fighting Irish Notre Dame theme song. It's not as good as the Harvard theme song, of course, but it would make you feel at home. And for a USC guy,
they're doing that pretty well too.
They're very good. So as a USC guy, it's hard for me to play
that song. Yeah, I'm surprised the set didn't burst into flames.
That's how appreciative we are of having you here. Thank you so much for coming. We appreciate you sharing your views, and nice to have you in California. Come back and visit us again.
Will do.
Mayor Pete Buttigieg, thank you very much for watching The Issue as we go to break or go away with the Fighting Irish theme song. See you next time. More issues. Thank you so much for listening to our interview with the mayor. We're going to have more from that band, by the way, on next week's show. Next week, we got a big show set up as well. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, former mayor of New York City, is going to be with us. Kevin McCarthy, the most powerful Republican in the House, is going to be with us. Plus, I'm playing in this big celebrity softball game called California Strong. Some of the biggest names in all of entertainment and sports. We are going to be talking to them. And a focus group for undecided voters for the debate. So there's a lot going on next week, including that band. We encourage you to check out our show on YouTube, youtube.com/AlexMichelson. That's ELEXMICHAELSON. Subscribe to the podcast here. Leave us reviews. Let us know what you think. We appreciate any of the Mayor Pete followers that may be checking us out for the first time. We got lots of conversations with lots of the other presidential candidates if you look through our podcast page. Thanks for listening. I'm Alex Michelson. Have a great week.